Welcome to Are You Ready for Obamacare? A town hall meeting on the Affordable Care Act, sponsored by the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW Public Radio. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, a reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune. I'll be hosting tonight's event. Healthcare reform has arrived, and our goal tonight is not an ideological battle, but a very practical one to help you understand just how the federal law will affect you and your loved ones. How can you find coverage if you're uninsured? How does the new law affect you and your current policy if you've already got insurance? And of course, just how affordable are policies under the Affordable Care Act? How much is this going to cost you? We've got a distinguished panel of guests ready to help, so let me give some quick introductions. We have Celia Nash Underwood. She's the founder and owner of Team Nash, which has offices in Park City and Salt Lake City. Since 1982, she's been a licensed insurance professional, and she's served on the agent advisory boards of Select Health, Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Utah, Altius Health Plans, United Healthcare, and Aetna. She's also a past president and current member of the Utah Association of Health Underwriters. Celia, thank you so much for your time tonight. Also with us, Jason Stevenson. He's the Education and Communications Director at the Utah Health Policy Project, or UHPP, as we'll refer to it this hour. That's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization focused on the challenges of the uninsured and rising health care costs. UHPP, along with the Association for Utah Community Health and United Way, was awarded a federal grant to be the designated health care navigators for the state of Utah, and these navigators help you understand your healthcare options under Obamacare. Jason, great to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Also with us is Representative Jim Dunnigan. He's a Republican from Taylorsville, representing District 39. He's currently Speaker Pro Tem of the Utah House of Representatives. He's also chair of the Health System Reform Task Force, as well as the chair of the Business and Labor Committee. He's served in the Utah House of Representatives since 2003, and in addition to his legislative work, he's the owner of Dunnigan Insurance, an insurance agency specializing in employee benefits. Representative Dunnigan, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
And finally, we have Nathan Checkitz. He's the Health Reform Coordinator at the Utah Department of Health. He was previously an Assistant Division Director, where he helped oversee Medicaid and CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. He's recently been working on the Medicaid Expansion Options Community Work Group, as well as the Governor's Health Innovation Summit. Nate, thanks for your time tonight.
Glad to be here.
And we're broadcasting live from the City Library in downtown Salt Lake City, live streaming at sltrib.com and kcpw.org. And we're taking your questions. If you're here in the auditorium, raise your hand and we'll get a microphone to you, and we'll get to those questions as quickly as possible. If you're in the listening audience, you can send questions and comments to the hashtag TribTalk or to the email healthreform@sltrib.com. I can tell you that we've been flooded with great questions, so we're going to get to as many as we can this hour. Before we get to the questions, though, can you sort of lay out the new landscape? The online insurance marketplace opened a little over a week ago, and tell us a little bit about this new structure. Jason, I'll have you do that introduction, if you would.
Sure. Well, of course, the title of today's event is Are You Ready for Obamacare? But I don't think healthcare.gov, the website, was ready for Obamacare or prime time, because that's been the frustrating aspect of the past week, is that the site's been slow, it's been glitchy, they're trying to fix it, but a lot of people are still not getting through. And all I can say is that it will get fixed, and it will be ready, and there is a long enrollment window going until the spring that you can sign up for this new insurance. So the marketplace is available, although maybe not as accessible as we would like. There are going to be 96 insurance plans listed on it, or maybe 94 actually, by six insurers on the individual marketplace. There's also going to be Avenue H, which is the small business marketplace for the state, which is going to offer plans for small businesses, I believe under 50 employees. And so that's where we are. The websites are here, and we're still just doing a lot of education about it, because people are hoping those doors to the website open a little bit more in the next couple weeks so they can go in and see for it themselves. But people are signing up. Not many, but some are.
What kind of demand are you seeing here in the state?
Well, a lot of people, of course, have gone to the website and been frustrated by not getting through. And so that's when we get their phone calls asking for advice and for information. So for those people, we actually send them to the Department of Insurance website here in Utah, where you can actually look at a PDF that has all of the rate information for all of the plans here in Utah. It's a little bit cumbersome. It's 300 pages long, but it does have the info that will be on the website eventually. And then we also send them to the Kaiser Family Foundation, www.kff.org. They've got a great premium calculator there to figure out what kind of cost you might have for this new insurance and what kind of subsidies you're going to get. So these are the workarounds we've developed. We're getting a lot of calls and we're doing a lot of events and you know, meeting people who are really, really excited about the insurance and are patient for now, but obviously really want to get through that door.
Representative Dunnigan, you've been interested in health reform for many years now. The government is not setting up an insurance plan. It's setting up a place where people can shop, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So how health reform changes the landscape for consumers in some significant ways, one of which is you can't be denied insurance if you have a pre-existing condition. What are some of the other ways that this new Obamacare is changing the insurance arena?
Well, let me just touch on the one you mentioned because that's an important one. So starting January 1st, effective dates, there are no more health questions to determine if you're going to be eligible for coverage. There is one, and that is if you use tobacco, and your rate can be higher if you use tobacco. But other than that, there's a age compression, and what that means is that the rates for the older folks will come down a little bit, and the rates for the younger folks will go up. So the younger folks will be subsidizing the older folks a little bit more than they are now. And then there's also, so the rates going forward will be based on family size, where you live, whether or not you use tobacco, and your age, but they won't be based on health status.
Okay. Celia Nash, tell me a little bit about your clients. What are they asking about? How is it changing premiums for the consumers that you're seeing?
You know, we deal with both the small employer and the individual market, and what we're finding with small employers is they're really trying to determine whether or not it makes sense for them to continue to offer benefits to the employees when they see that there's some really lucrative subsidies that are available to individuals through the marketplace. The tough part is we've, you know, just like everybody else, we've had a tough time accessing that website and really getting the rates, so we've tried to do the workarounds for them. But I think at the end of the day, really depending on the makeup of your group, if you are a small employer, if you do have employees that are in a more of a lower income age bracket, which is anywhere between 100 and 400% of poverty level, an example of that would be someone at 100% that's single would be a little over $11,000 a year, all the way up to $45,000 a year. They would qualify for a tax credit. And so we look at the group and determine, do you have very many employees in this kind of subset? If so, let's look at the individual marketplace as well.
Okay. And Nate, of course, the state has its hand in all of this, operating the Small Business Healthcare Exchange called Avenue H, and administering the Medicaid program. How will Medicaid and Medicaid enrollment, how will that process be affected by Obamacare here in Utah?
So most of the changes for the Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, come on January 1st for our programs. And some of the changes that are happening there is that the income levels for our children programs are increasing slightly, and that will allow more children to qualify for Medicaid. We're also removing, as required by the Affordable Care Act, some asset tests or resource tests that currently exist for these programs. So additional adults and children will begin qualifying for Medicaid. The state estimates that somewhere around 50 or 60,000 individuals that will gain coverage based on those mandatory changes. And then as the state's really been going into the larger discussion about whether or not it should do the optional expansion to adults that are currently not eligible for Medicaid, and that's been the process that the governor's work group has been looking at this summer, trying to decide whether or not what options are available to the state in that arena.
Okay. Again, you're listening to Are You Ready for Obamacare, a town hall meeting sponsored by the Salt Lake Tribune and broadcast on KCPW Radio. We're broadcasting live from the City Library in downtown Salt Lake City. And if you'd like to join us, you can send your questions to the hashtag TribTalk on Twitter. You can also send email to healthreform@sltrib.com. Let's go straight to questions from our audience. This email from Soraya, she is asking, how do tax credits work with regard to the ACA? Again, people are concerned about how much this is really going to cost them. Celia, you mentioned some tax subsidies that are available. Again, explain exactly what levels those tax subsidies are available.
Well, the tax credit is going to be based on your income, but the nice thing about the tax credit is that you are going to be paying the net amount. So it's not that you're going to have to file for this tax credit at the end of the year. It's determined beforehand, and then the insurance company will bill you that net amount, and it ranges anywhere from, you know, you only may pay 2% of your income towards health premiums up to 9.5% of your income for health premiums for a tax credit.
Okay. Questions from the audience? We've got two roving microphones. Please just raise your hands and we'll get someone to you. The next question is from Brian. He writes, if somebody who cannot afford health insurance is forced to pay for it, what really happens? I see that they have two choices. One, have someone else really foot the bill, or number two, get fined. And if they can't afford the health insurance in the first place, I'm guessing they cannot afford the fine. Jason, do you want to take that one on?
Sure. That is a question we get a lot in our public forums. There are a couple of waivers and exclusions for that penalty, the personal responsibility penalty. If the insurance premiums cost more than 8% of your income, you are not obligated to actually, you know, buy that insurance, and you get an exemption from that. Also, if you earn under 100% of poverty right now in Utah, you would be eligible for this optional Medicaid expansion. But as Utah is still deciding on that, you would not be assessed a penalty currently in Utah. But about the premium tax subsidies, we think a lot of young people are going to kind of be weighing, should I pay the penalty or should I get the insurance? And we do some events at universities. And what we try to come across is that the subsidies that are going to go out there to all these Utahns, we think about 300,000, are really going to be skewed to young people because they're lower on the income level, on the income ladder. And so those subsidies for people who make $20,000, $30,000 a year are really going to knock their premiums down to, you know, $110, $120 a month. Or even we just priced out for a 25-year-old who makes $18,000 a year. That 25-year-old in Salt Lake County would pay $65 a month for health insurance. That's a price that will make him happy and probably make his mom happy.
Let's go to a gentleman here. Say your name, if you would.
Scott Clark. A question is that how does this Obama plan, how does it apply to nonprofit small businesses and in particularly churches? There's many churches here in the Valley that have pastors that are full-time but not making a lot of income, but no health insurance. How would it apply to someone like that?
Panelists, Representative Dunnigan.
So there's a couple of avenues for you, and we shouldn't overlook the other exchange. We've talked a lot about the individual exchange, but there's another exchange for small employers, and it's called Avenue H. It's for employers with 2 to 50 employees, and it has its own tax benefits. Only through an employer-sponsored plan like Avenue H can you deduct your premiums. Can the employer pay the premiums pre-tax, and can the employee have their share of the premiums paid pre-tax? If you go to the individual exchange, you may qualify for some very nice subsidies to lower your rate, but the amount that you end up paying is going to be after tax. But for you, you have two options. You can go to the individual exchange and apply for a subsidy. And if you don't get paid as much as you're worth, you'll qualify for a nice subsidy. Or the other option is if you have at least two employees, you could go to Avenue H, and the business then may qualify for a tax credit.
Can I just please, yes.
The nice thing about Avenue H, too, is like with most group health plans, an employer is required to pay a certain percentage of an employee's premium in order to qualify that group for coverage. And You, as a small employer, you're not penalized if you don't make your coverage what they call affordable, and the word affordable means 9.5% of the employee's pay. With Avenue H, an employer can pick whatever premium they want to contribute, and it's just like Representative Dunnigan said, is you get to have those premiums deducted pre-tax. So it's a great benefit for small employers, one that, you know, I think most small employers should really look at for that reason.
Great. Nate, anything to add? Okay.
I could just add one quick
Please.
Thing, is that if you are a business that has fewer than 50 full-time equivalency or 50 FTEs, then there is no obligation for you to provide health insurance to your employees. So, you know, that's about 75% of the businesses in Utah fall into that category. So again, the magic number is 50 FTE or 50 full-time equivalents.
Okay. Question, gentleman in the red.
My name is Fred Reyes, and it's a two-part question. I have about a million, but I'll ask this two-part one. What is the Congressional Health Plan like now, and how does the Affordable Care Act affect congressional members and certain staffers?
A political question. Who wants to take it?
I can do that.
Jason.
I get that question a lot at public forums. So there was actually an amendment to the ACA back in 2010 that forced Congress and their staffers to get insurance through the marketplaces. Senator Grassley from Iowa actually proposed it. I don't think he intended it to pass, but it did. And it was in there. And so about a year ago, everyone was like, uh-oh, we got to figure this out. Because they are the only employees that are actually forced to use the marketplaces. Everyone else really has a choice. But congressional employees, staffers, and congresspeople have to go in there. And so what they worked it out was that because they're not going to be getting the premium subsidies, because they work for an employer and, you know, the employer, you know, that kind of precludes them from doing that, they're going to get the federal match that they've been getting for their congressional health insurance applied to the insurance they're buying on the marketplace. And from what I understand, it's a pretty generous match. So it's probably even better than the subsidies that other folks get. But that was a way that they can make it affordable for congressional staffers. And I happen to know quite a few of them, and, you know, they make $30,000, $25,000 a year. So this was a way that they would be able to afford the insurance and not get caught in a trap that, you know, was really created by something they had no control over.
Representative, yes.
I'll add a little bit to that. There's a nuance to it, though, and Jason's right in that what they're doing is they're making the congressional offices, they're considering each of those to be a small business, then they're eligible for the small business exchange, and the feds are paying either 70 or 75% of the premium for those congressional staffers, but they've split it off into a nuance. So if you're a congressional worker that you work for a committee, you're exempt from having to get your coverage through the exchange. It's been narrowed down to the congressional offices and their staff. I know some of the staff, they work for a committee, and they don't have to abide by that. I do think it's fair that Congress should have to play by the same rules that the rest of us do, even though they sometimes try to avoid that.
Right in the back, yes.
So if you're already on Medicaid or on Medicaid and Medicare, you don't have to worry about any type of changes. Is that right?
Nate?
Yeah, that's correct. The current Medicaid program is staying the way it is. So if you're currently on the program, especially as an adult, and as you say, with the dual eligible being on the Medicare and Medicaid programs, that will remain the same for you.
Another question right here.
Donna Dinsdale. Yes. My question is for someone who is living abroad that's a U.S. citizen and paying taxes, how can they benefit from the marketplace insurance?
Okay. Expatriates.
I saw a question about that 2 months ago. In about 10 seconds, I read it over. So this is going to be an exercise in recall. I think if you're an expatriate, the same rules apply based on how much time you spend abroad. So I believe if you spend more than 180 days a year abroad, then you, gosh, can you use the subsidies? I don't think so. I think you can, you know, you have to be living here a little bit more than half the year to be eligible for that. But if you have foreign health care, then it covers you and you're not penalized or anything like that.
Other panelists? Not sure. Okay. All right.
We can get back to you on that, though.
Good question. Yes.
Hi. My name is Monica Tovar. My question is, I understand that there's 6 insurance companies offering 96 plans. here in Utah. Can I go around the marketplace at this time and actually go to those individual health plans to sign up and look at what the coverage is available, or do I have to go through healthcare.gov?
I can answer. Celia.
The only reason why you'd want to go to healthcare.gov is if you know you're going to qualify for a tax credit. It's a lot of paperwork you have to go through healthcare.gov. Plus, it's really not working right now, but you can most definitely go direct to the insurance carriers. But if you go to their websites, and a lot of them have put on their website how much do you make, once you put in that figure, they may redirect you back to healthcare.gov to go through that process.
Yes, Representative.
One thing to be aware of, so the answer is, as Celia said, you don't have to go to the marketplace. You can go to a carrier like, well, I won't give them a plug right now, but you can go to any of the commercial carriers and get your coverage direct. One thing to be aware of is if you go to the individual marketplace or the exchange, you'll be required to essentially apply for Medicaid. And if you're eligible for Medicaid, you'll go through the Medicaid door and you'll not be able to get a subsidy to purchase a commercial policy. So there's a Medicaid test, and that's the paperwork that Celia talked about. It's daunting, the application, but you have to apply essentially for Medicaid, and then only if you're not eligible for Medicaid would you be eligible for a subsidy to purchase a commercial product through the marketplace or the exchange.
I want to get to a couple of our email questions. Craig typed in, will the Affordable Health Care Act cover dental and vision, such as my kids' braces and my contacts? What do you think?
Yeah, I can answer that.
Celia.
Part of the Affordable Care Act was there's essential benefits, and part of the essential benefits was to cover pediatric vision and dental, and it's not to cover braces. It's just for the annual exam preventive for the dental and for the vision.
Okay. Another email question from Anne. I've been using Salt Lake County's health clinics for any medical I need since losing my job 2 years ago. Will I be able to continue to do this? And for that matter, will these clinics remain open? Nate, do you have a handle on that?
Yeah, in general, those charity care type programs will remain open and the same. If the state chooses to expand Medicaid, many of the individuals that are receiving coverage now through those clinics would be eligible for a Medicaid-type benefit, and so might be able to receive coverage through one of Medicaid's accountable care organizations, one of the health plans that we work with, or through other avenues. But in general, I have not heard of these charity care organizations shutting their doors or reducing their services right now. I think
Jason, is that what you're hearing too?
That's what we're hearing too. In fact, there's been an investment in federally qualified health clinics because of the Affordable Care Act. There's a couple million dollars that came into our CHC system here in Utah, and we've just heard that there's going to be 3 new clinics opening in Utah by January, one in South Salt Lake and then 2 out in eastern and central Utah.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Are You Ready for Obamacare? It's a town hall meeting sponsored by the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW Radio. We're broadcasting live here at the City Library in downtown Salt Lake City, and we've got a group of experts on hand to answer your questions. Again, send them along to healthreform@sltrib.com via email, or you can put them on the hashtag TribTalk on Twitter. Let's get to another question from our auditorium, sir.
Oh.
Hang on just a minute. We'll go up here first.
Hi. My name is Nathaniel Eschler. I lived in Massachusetts while I was going to school, and so I participated in the plan that they had there. What is the expected time, based on what we saw there, and if the costs are coming down there, which I'm not sure about, for the general cost of healthcare to start to slide down, what is the projection on that?
Representative, did you have an answer to that?
Well, you know, I was on a panel with the director of the Massachusetts Exchange a month or so ago. Their costs have not come down. What he told me is when we first started our exchange, we were focused on access. And we did, our whole impetus was to decrease the number of uninsured. And they've been successful in doing that. However, their costs are still going up significantly. And so he said, we really need to focus on costs. So they have not done it here. To Governor Herbert's credit, he has assembled a team to for a potential innovation grant to try to look at different things like payment reform to actually get to the underlying costs of healthcare. If you want insurance costs to come down, you have to lower or stem the growth in the underlying healthcare costs.
Jason, did you have something?
That definitely echo what Representative Dunnigan said. The uninsured rate in Massachusetts when they started was 11%, now it's about 3%. The uninsured rate in Utah is about 13.2% right now. Hopefully the uninsured rate will come down. That is what the Affordable Care Act is focused on. Utah is different from Massachusetts in one critical way. We are the lowest cost healthcare state in the country, where Massachusetts and I believe New Jersey are the highest costs, and that was when they started as well. They were up there. So Utah hopefully will be able to, you know, work on bringing down its uninsured rate and keeping itself as the lowest cost health insurance or healthcare state in the country.
Yes.
I have not.
We're on the radio, okay. So if you can put it up there. Thanks.
Sorry. I have not gone through the application yet, but to my understanding, is it a medical questionnaire or is it a financial questionnaire? So it's really only financial details about the person and what exactly they're doing?
Celia? Yeah, it's only asked name, address, your finances. There isn't anything asked on there other than if you smoke on the application.
But other than that, there's no health-related other questions associated with it.
Just none.
Age and employment. What happens to people that are not employed or currently not employed or in between jobs? How do they fill in that application?
Nate Checkets?
Yeah, so the basis of the application really is going to look at how you file your taxes. That's going to be one of their primary questions. And if you're unemployed, you would just put down your new income of, you know, you don't have income right now. It is primarily, as mentioned previously, it is looking at your income to try to decide whether or not you should be Medicaid eligible, or if you're tax credit eligible, how much your tax credit should be. So to your original question, it is not based on medical type questions. It's more of who's in your household, what's your income, how are you filing your taxes? Those are the sorts of questions you'll see on the questionnaire.
Okay, sir.
Paul Beyer, you said initially that only the person's income would be considered, but now Nathan, you just said that it would be tax filing status plus income, considering the whole household. I'm a little confused. Is it only the person who requires healthcare or health insurance, or is it consider the whole household, including that person?
It's generally based on your whole household. It depends on the individual that's seeking coverage, but it's generally your whole household. So in a simple example, if you had two parents and two children in a household, you would count both their incomes, both of the parents' incomes, as you're determining eligibility for that household.
To get too personal, but I'm on Medicare. My wife is not, because she's not 65. So she needs health insurance. Is it her income only that counts? It's
household income.
Okay, it's household income. Thank you.
Okay, very good. A question up on the top tier. Yes.
Well, insurance is becoming we've just been hit with a huge tax liability. And so my question is two parts. One, because the focus should be and is supposed to be on cost reduction. What happens when people who don't have insurance go into the emergency room once Obamacare is implemented? And second, are there any price caps on medical equipment suppliers that are being looked at or anything like that?
Okay, so the ER question first. Nate?
Sure, on the emergency room question, the current law still is the standard, and that is if you go into an emergency room, they do need to provide you treatment and to get you stabilized. There is a program that is coming up that hospitals may take advantage of, and that is that they can do a process that's called presumptive eligibility, where they might help you determine if you're Medicaid eligible. And if they believe you are, they at that point might be able to put you right on Medicaid as you complete the rest of the process. So that might help you be able to pay that bill if you are Medicaid eligible. But the current law that requires that emergency rooms treat individuals remains in place.
Forgive me, I forgot the second part.
The second question was about caps on medical devices or medical procedures. Well, there is a tax on medical devices that is helping to pay for the Affordable Care Act. I believe it's 3.2% on gross net for medical device makers. And there are actually quite a few of them here in Utah, and that is going to impact Utah businesses. So when we hear about taxes in Obamacare, that's one. The other one is a tax on high net earners. So if you make more than $200,000 or $250,000 as a joint filer, your capital gains taxes are going to go up. So any stocks or bonds you sell, any gains you have, there's going to be a little bit more tax on that.
Representative?
In Obamacare, there are 13 new taxes, and many of them will cause the cost of health care, health insurance to go up. So it's because, ironical in a bit, we're trying to bring health care costs and rates down. And yet there's a health insurance tax, it varies, but maybe an average of 2.4% on premium. So if you're paying $100 a month insurance, it's going to go up 2.4% for that. Over the next 10 years, that's estimated to cost $100 billion in a brand new tax that insurance rates will go up to just pay for that. And then as Jason said, you have the medical device tax, you have the reinsurance tax, you have the tanning bed tax. There are many, many taxes which are going to push insurance costs up.
Can I just add something? But part of Obamacare is also to get rid of lifetime limits. And they can't. The insurance companies cannot have an annual limit on essential benefits either. So I don't know if medical devices fall into the whether or not they're an essential benefit, but there is now no longer a lifetime maximum on health insurance.
Okay, right here.
In the past, the doctors have been paid for it with a fee-for-service reimbursement, but as I understand, it's moving towards more of an accountable care reimbursement. I'm wondering what the timetable of that is and if it's going to be coming soon or when that will happen.
So in the Medicaid program, that's a change we've already made along, especially here in the around Salt Lake County, Utah County, Weber and Davis County. Those changes have already been made where we, as the Medicaid organization, as a state, are paying the health plans one fee for the entire month, and then they're responsible for providing the care. And so we're moving away from this concept of paying for each individual service provided and paying a more global rate.
And when we talk about bringing costs down in healthcare, that is going to be a major mover to do that.
I want to get to a question on the email. Emily writes, how does the ACA affect same-sex couples in the state of Utah who are not allowed to have health insurance coverage for their partner?
We've looked into that a little bit.
Jason?
Celia, too. There actually was a recent ruling that said that if a same-sex couple is legally married in another state that recognizes that marriage, the place of celebration, they can actually come back here to Utah and file their taxes as if they were married, based on the DOMA ruling recently from the Supreme Court, and also file for the premium subsidies on the marketplace using a married or a joint filing. Now, how that reflects on state taxes, we're still waiting to hear out, and Celia might know a little bit more about this as well.
Well, not on that, but on, through the Avenue H, they do allow for domestic partners for the businesses already, so that's something that's already available to small employers going through Avenue H.
Okay. Another question from the audience in the back.
Does it work? Oh. Currently, I had to move back with my parents because of financial problems. I'm in so much debt, I'm actually in the hole. How can I afford insurance? Because my bank account's like always in the negative. Hmm. How can somebody like that afford 50, 60, 100 bucks a month?
Well, this brings up sort of the big question mark in Utah, which is the optional Medicaid expansion, as Nate alluded to. The Affordable Care Act was originally set up to cover folks from 0% of poverty up to 400% of poverty. The first 100% from 0 to 100% of poverty through an optional Medicaid expansion, and then from 100 to 400 with these premium subsidies. But the Supreme Court ruling broke that up and made it optional for states to decide on Medicaid expansion. Utah is one of those states still deciding, and there's a timeline for a decision over the next couple months. But what we're finding when we do these events is that a lot of people come up to us and say, I don't make 100% of poverty, I make 70% of poverty, 60% of poverty. What are my options? And unfortunately, we can't give them a good answer. There really aren't the options that are in other states like Colorado or Nevada or Arizona, which have decided to expand Medicaid and would have insurance for them in those states. So it's a little bit disappointing that we don't have an answer yet, but I will say that if you're interested in this topic, there's a group outside, Utahns for Medicaid Expansion, which has a table that would be glad to hear your story and talk to you about it.
Representative.
I can't tell how old you are. You look young and healthy, but I can't quite tell with the lights. If you're not yet age 26, over, well, for the other folks, once you're on the, you guys that are the youngsters down here, if you're not age 26, you could go back on your parents' plan, you know, if under either open enrollment or in a qualifying event, and even if you're married, you can go back. We will never get rid of our kids. Even if you're married, you can go back on your parents' plan and stay on it till age 26. Doesn't matter if you're in school or not. So that's an option for some of the young invincibles.
Yes.
One, I'd like to say thank you for bringing these public forums available to us. I've learned a lot just so far. My question is, I am a single household, but I am currently legally required to file taxes with someone whose income I do not share. How would I answer that particular question on the health exchange?
You said household income, but is she technically in a household? That's a tricky question. Who wants to take it?
I'm not sure I understand it. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm legally separated.
Okay.
I live alone, but I'm legally required at this point to file taxes with my ex, soon-to-be ex-husband. Mm-hmm. We do not share any income and have not for over a year now.
Well, the thing about the Affordable Care Act is it actually is forward-looking in terms of your income. So if you go onto the marketplace and you look and buy insurance, it's really your income for 2014 that is most important, not necessarily your income for 2013. So it's more forward-looking for your income. So it's what you think you're going to make in 2014, which will decide your eligibility for the premium subsidies.
Projected taxes?
Well, projected income, really.
Projected income.
And? I see. So you'll be filing your taxes for 2013 in 2014. But any income in 2014, you would file in 2015. So again, it's forward-looking, so there's a certain point where you're going to be in a new situation, I think.
But for now,
over here, go right
I'm
ahead.
Still not quite sure.
Maybe we can talk after.
Hi, my name is Marilyn Smith, and I've always been very interested in health insurance, and witness that I'm here. My friends very often come to me asking advice, and I'm wondering where one can get training. I don't want to be a paid navigator, but just to get the training to be a volunteer navigator.
Sure, I can handle that.
Okay.
I work for the Utah Health Policy Project, which received one of the federal navigator grants here in Utah. So there actually are a whole bunch of levels of people that can assist. Navigators are sort of like the pilots. Certified application counselors are kind of like the co-pilots. But then there's a whole group of people called Champions for Coverage, which are out there spreading the word about the new options under the Affordable Care Act. And if you go to the website marketplace.cms.gov, you will learn not only how to, you know, be a navigator or a certified application counselor, which requires, you know, some hoops to jump through, but the easy way is to become a champion for coverage. And again, that's marketplace.cms.gov. Or just check in with a local civic organization or community health clinic. They could always use your help.
Thank you. Yes.
Could one of you address some rumors I kept hearing? Maybe they're rumors, maybe they're the truth. People are saying that they have, for example, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Utah, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Maryland, or they're with an employer and they have good insurance. They are concerned that they're going to be dropped from their employee-based insurance and then be charged more, or their spouses or family will be charged. Is that true? Can you address that?
It's not true. They cannot drop or rescind coverage now. That's part of ACA. And it could be that the employer themselves is saying that they no longer want to offer benefits to the employees So they're either reducing their hours underneath 30, but as far as the health carriers, they cannot rescind coverage or drop anybody from the health plan.
That answers your rumor question. Okay. Yes, in the back.
Thank you. I'm wondering if the laws have changed for physicians and healthcare facilities. Do they have to now accept all 96 plans, or are we still limited if we want to go to a particular doctor or a particular hospital? Will some of the plans not cover those facilities?
You are still limited by the insurance carrier's provider network. Of course, you can use out-of-network benefits for those that offer that, but the doctors are not required to participate in all the plans.
Are they required to participate in some? I mean, are there some that can just opt out of insurance?
Sure. Totally? If a provider wants to not, you know, if they don't want to participate in a health plan, that's their prerogative.
The one thing to add is the plans, the six plans on the individual marketplace and the three on Avenue H, they're the plans that you see the billboards for driving up and down I-15. So they're the big plans in the state. They're the ones that do accept many providers.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, in the back.
You alluded to earlier that some insurance cover, or well, insurance carriers are now required to provide same-sex coverage under DOMA, but in Utah there are some employers that opt to not. Is that changing with the Affordable Health Care Act?
Representative?
I'll make a comment on that. The insurers are not required to offer same-sex coverage. I believe what Celia was saying is that many insurance plans make that as an option to the employer, and the employer can elect whether or not they want to offer coverage to domestic partners. There's nothing that I'm aware of that the insurers are not compelled to offer that, but they offer it as an option like many other options in an insurance plan.
Okay. Other questions? Yes.
Yes, thank you. The first of two questions will be very simple. If I'm on COBRA right now, and one of these providers on ACA has cheaper premiums and what I consider a better plan, can I drop my COBRA insurance?
Yes, you can.
That was simple. Thank you very much. Now for the harder one. How long is the ACA funded for? And the second part of that question is, if and when funding runs out, what do you see happening?
Okay. Nate.
So just one comment on the dropping COBRA coverage. The plans that are available through the marketplace start January 1st. So you would want to make sure you time that correctly. Dropping coverage now would not be a good idea.
And you need to sign up by December 15th for that.
Correct. I believe your question was, is there enough money for the Affordable Care Act, and what happens if it goes away? I'm not going to speak for the federal government. We can all see.
You could, because there's no one actually there speaking for
right.
It.
They are all on furlough right now, so as Jason pointed out, they couldn't dispute anything I said. Clearly, as a country, we have a large debt, $17 trillion. And I know that's a factor that's weighed on the governor as he's looked towards making this decision about Medicaid expansion. As people look at the expansion option and what the state would have to pay, the state would pay a small portion of that, and the federal government would pay a large portion of that. But he has expressed concerns that that is all taxpayer dollars, and can the federal government maintain its commitment? We're seeing today that they are struggling to maintain some of their current commitments. And so that's one of the factors that policymakers in Utah are weighing regarding the Medicaid expansion, because yes, the state would have to come up with a smaller amount of money, but we'd be partnering with the federal government, and there are some questions about their ability to maintain what they've proposed and how they do it. Right now, all of the funding is set up in the laws and is moving forward. It's not being impeded by the shutdown. So that hasn't changed.
Anyone else want to jump in on that? Not with a 10-foot pole. Okay, this question on Twitter coming from Robin. What happens if I get coverage with ACA and then I get a job that has an income that does not qualify for a subsidized plan? So can you change midstream, I guess, is the question. And who wants to take it?
I can take it. You can, Of course, you go on your employer's plan once you meet the applicable new hire waiting period. By the way, that has also changed with Obamacare, where an employer can't have more than a 60-day wait. Well, 90 days, exactly 90 days, I should say. A lot of the insurance carriers have opted to have waiting periods of the first of the month following 60 days to comply. But you most definitely can drop your individual plan. You would lose your subsidy once you're eligible for an employer-sponsored plan. And then as long as you enroll on your employer-sponsored plan during your new hire waiting period, then you're just fine.
No other comments. Okay. Another question from the audience. Yes.
I currently have an individual plan that I pay for 100% myself. If I want to take advantage of the subsidies, there's no way that that can apply to my current individual plan, is that correct? I would need to drop this plan and apply for a new plan.
That's correct, and there would be some changes to any plan that starts on January 1st as well. Men and women would pay the same for coverage. The age rating, as Representative Dunnigan said, would shrink for those, especially those that are older, and the pre-existing condition clause would go away.
Representative?
And I don't know if you're interested, but these individual plans will also include maternity coverage now that they don't include.
Am I likely to see much lower premiums if I go with a plan that's on the exchange as opposed to what I have, because I've looked in the coverage in the paper and I do qualify for subsidies.
Well, I'll make a comment on that. The federal government's requiring that for the same type of coverage, the rates have to be the same inside and outside of the exchange. So if it's costing $200 a month for a particular plan, it's gonna cost the same inside and outside. However, only inside the exchange can you qualify for a subsidy. So if you have a policy now that's costing you $200, you could go to the exchange and find a policy with the same carrier that's as close to your coverage as you have and see what subsidy. If you qualify for a subsidy, then you'll net out paying less.
You want to keep in mind that subsidy is based on what they call a silver plan. So it's not that someone can go out and get whatever coverage they want and they get this subsidy. They actually have to calculate the subsidy on what they call the second lowest silver plan. And then from there, they can use that to help purchase other coverage.
If you go to kff.org, the Kaiser Family Foundation's website, you can use their premium subsidy calculator to find out what you would pay for a silver plan in Utah, the benchmark plan for Utah.
Thank you.
Again, you're listening to Are You Ready for Obamacare? It's a town hall meeting sponsored by the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW Radio. We're taking your questions at the hashtag TribTalk on Twitter or on email at healthreform@sltrib.com. Another question, I believe, in the very back. There we go, sir. Yes.
Hi. Three parts question, and I'm going to ask each question first before we're losing
track. Okay, briefly, please.
Okay. First and foremost, it's a political question. There are sentiments that this is a socialist policy. It's socialism basically because it's mandated and everybody should have some sort of a health plan by January 1st. What is your answer to that question or sentiment?
I'll take a crack. That is one of the things we've heard about the Affordable Care Act since the very beginning. It's socialized medicine, a government takeover of healthcare. I lived in Britain. My wife went to medical school in Canada. I've definitely seen different styles of healthcare. And I'll have to say that the Affordable Care Act strengthens and broadens the private insurance marketplace in the United States. It's all about private insurance, and that's what it does. As for the mandate, there's a lot of mandates we have in our society. Paying taxes is one. Buying car insurance if you own a car is another. So I don't think, and this is a constitutional issue, is that an infringement on our personal rights? I'm a health policy wonk. I don't deal with constitutional issues that much, but we'll save that for another debate.
Okay, Representative.
I'd like to make a comment on that.
Sure.
It certainly is a socialistic agenda in that we have a federal government never before, now requiring us to purchase something. Requiring us to purchase something whether we want to or not, and there's a penalty if you don't purchase that item. Secondly, the states have effectively regulated insurance for many, many years, and now what we have is a huge intrusion of the federal government coming in with their oversight, with unnecessary and duplicative rules. Now we're going to have a dual regulator, which only costs money. We have the state and the federal government. I had a meeting with the governor's office and with the senior folks back in the federal government, and we were pleading with them, give the states more flexibility. We don't need all these rules. We've already got over 20,000 pages of rules that go with Obamacare that we're trying to figure out. We said, we don't need more rules, we need more flexibility. And their response was, we're giving the states flexibility. I said, how are you doing that? And they said, through all these rules and regulations that we're issuing. And I said, we can't take any more flexibility. You know, don't give us any more. So I have to disagree with my good friend Jason. It's a huge intrusion into the private sector. It is not strengthening the private sector. I you know, if we had time, I could go on the additional costs and the duplication. If nothing else, now having federal government oversight and the state, that increased costs.
All right. With that philosophical debate aside, could we get on with some practical questions? Do you have
one? Sure. Yeah. The other one is by actually bringing 30 to 45 million uninsured into this pool. Actually, the rest of us should pick up the tab, either by increasing, you know, paying taxes, extra taxes, or increasing the premium. And the study shows actually the insured premiums will rise between 4% to 10% by 2015, or by some other estimates, between 300 to 500%.
Okay, your question? That,
well, the question is that going to be basically our premium is going to rise or taxes are going to go up?
Jason.
Well, this is how I answer questions like that, is I have a nanny, she's 62 years old, she watches my two-year-old son. She had a pre-existing condition that meant that when she went out to buy insurance, it was going to cost her $1,000 a month. So she wasn't able to afford that. And her pre-existing condition was that, well, I won't get into it. But when we ran the numbers for her, her insurance is going to cost $230 a month under the Affordable Care Act, $900 to $230. And she's going to be eligible for Medicare in a couple years. And by being insured and being healthy for a couple of years before she gets on Medicare, she's going to be a healthier person for the rest of her life. Not only, you know, I care because she watches my son, but I care about her because I want her to really enjoy her grandchildren and her life. And so being insured means a lot both for her and for many people in her family. And that's what I think about when I think about what the Affordable Care Act does in Utah and in our country.
Okay, another. Sir, you have a question?
Yes, this is a personal one, not a political one. I have one son that's over 26. He's in the reserve, so he's getting some money from there. He works like 2 to 4 hours one day a week. And so that's the first son. The second son, he's under 26, so he is under my health care plan. And my other daughter's under my health care plan. Now, when the time comes, are they going to have to be looked at by my finances and theirs to be considered under this program once they go over 26? That's one comment. Then I have to say thank you very much. An ounce of preventative medicine goes a long way and saves a lot of money.
So the parents' income, is that figured into premiums for a young person?
I mean, once they're over the age of 26, they're no longer a dependent, really, and they, you know, I don't think it does qualify that where they have to have your income included, but do you guys have
I think it's if they're dependent upon your taxes is one issue as well, if they're dependent. One option I also want to put out there is if anybody's under age 30, there's a catastrophic plan available in the Utah marketplace, which isn't the full 10 essential health benefits, which means it can have really low premiums, but it's designed for those Utah snowboarders who occasionally hit trees and need that insurance to help them recover.
Okay, in the back, yes.
Yeah, Medicare, Medicaid is always discussed as a government program that is financially unsustainable. And I'm wondering how the Medicaid expansion is going to make that better or worse.
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, as I alluded earlier, that's one of the things that Governor Herbert's really looking at in regards to this optional expansion, because it does increase Medicaid spending. And as I mentioned, if the state share of that is only 10%, it does still require 90% from the federal government, and so will increase that entitlement spending. There's things that he's looking at in relation to that decision. He said that there's needs out in the state. People need to be able to get more affordable care, but he's also concerned about how we pay for that in the long term, and so that's part of the issues that he's weighing in his decision-making process.
Yes, sir.
Dane Doucette. Just a quick clarification, then a question. The clarification on this thing that we were handed out when we came in, it says we estimate our 2013 income, but Jason said 2014, so it's 2014 income for determined subsidies on the health insurance?
I believe it is forward-looking, yeah, because that would be what you would file for in 2015 when the subsidies would be reconciled with your income.
Okay. And another comment or question I have is, in talking to some people about this, they say, they'd be better off just putting the money aside. They'd have to put in a premium, pay the penalty, and then if they get some, like they get cancer or something, since there's no pre-existing conditions, they'll just sign up for insurance then and get those things covered. And that doesn't sound right to me. I'm just wondering if it really works that way or...
You can only enroll during open enrollment. So if you're someone that decides to not enroll now or not enroll during this initial enrollment until March, the end of March, you won't be able to enroll until next October 1st. So if you do have something catastrophic, you're really out of luck until October 1st of the following year.
We tell folks you can't sign up for Obamacare in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. Unless it's open enrollment and you've got a good smartphone connection and you're not bleeding too much. But in general, you can't.
We've only got a few more minutes left. Other questions from the audience? Yes, right here, ma'am.
Hi. Can family, if they're going to qualify for subsidies using the household income, can a high user of insurance sign up for one plan versus the other person sign up for, say, a lower deductible plan and the one have a high deductible plan? Can they have two different plans?
Yes, everybody in the family can have a different plan.
Yes.
Sorry, going back to the election period. So Medicare right now has your initial election period, your open enrollment period, and your special election period. Are you going to have similar or the same type of election periods for these types of programs?
You're going to have you'll have an election period. If you lose coverage, you will be able to get on to an individual plan. But just for open enrollment to secure coverage, not due to a life event, it's only until October until December 15th. Unless this year, it's going to go until the end of March.
Okay, sir?
Is Obamacare itself on the medication part of it, is that going to control anything? So like obviously when we have an insurance policy, they dictate what is going to be covered on it. Has that been addressed to help cost and for prescriptions, I guess, is really what I'm getting to. Is that being addressed at all?
Is your question, does Obamacare require or mandate certain medications to be covered?
Well, like, for instance, if you have, I'll give you an example. Let's say Crohn's disease, okay? You have to have a certain medication. It's very expensive. The insurance company says, I'm not going to cover it. Is Obama now saying, hey, we need to cover these things? Or are they helping with that cost? How is that?
Well, as Jason, I think, mentioned earlier, there are 10 essential health benefits that have to be covered. One of those is prescription drugs. So prescription drugs have to be covered, but insurance carriers are still allowed to have preferred drug lists and formularies. And there are some stipulations on what drugs they have to cover, but they still have some flexibility on what drugs to cover on a preferred basis and which ones not to.
It is private insurance, and you can always ask your doctor or petition your insurance company to add a drug to it. My wife does it as a physician. So.
Well, the other nice thing, too, as part of Obamacare is now prescription drug costs are included in the out-of-pocket maximum where they weren't before. And so that's a huge deal. My son has Crohn's as well, and that really will affect us where we don't have to pay those high costs as a separate out-of-pocket maximum.
Thank you.
In the back. Yes, sir.
Three quick questions. Medicare starts at 65, yes?
Yep, uh-huh.
And you enroll at 64?
64 and a half. You can enroll 6 months before.
Oh, only 6 months. Okay. And
You get too excited, your coverage would only start the first of the month in which you turn 65.
No, understood. Okay. But I had understood that you have to enroll, or you could enroll 1 year in advance. Yeah. No. Okay, half year. And are health savings plans part of this? Health savings accounts?
Yes, there are several carriers still offering what they call high deductible health plans. The only thing that changed as part of Obamacare is the penalty if you take your money out of a health savings account for non-medical expenses. That's increased to 20%.
I've got a question on the email from Craig. If I cannot make it to the meeting tonight, guess he's not here, where can I go at a later date to have my questions answered by a person and not a website? Jason.
Sure. There is a phone number attached to the website that has real people. It's 1-800-318-2596. Two of the call centers that are handling those calls are in Utah, one in Sandy and one in Layton. And that is a place where you can talk to a real live person.
And are they answering the phones? No,
they are. They're
no
actually,
glitches.
They're
okay,
handling
good.
A lot of calls because the website is down. And I also would say you can go to takecareutah.org. That's a website we created. It is working. And that's where you can get connections to enrollment assisters, navigators in your neighborhood. Punch in your zip code. The nearest ones pop up, just like finding the nearest Home Depot.
Can I also say that you can call your broker? Too. I mean, you're not going to pay any higher rate by using a broker, and they have all the information you need as well.
One last question. Yes, in the back.
What about if you are undocumented, but you want to buy, and you're not eligible for insurance, for the subsidy, not for insurance, I guess, in general, but you want to buy a insurance privately. Can you do that?
Private insurance?
Yes, you can. I mean, if you are an undocumented immigrant, you can go to any private insurer and purchase a plan. What you can't do is use the marketplace or receive the subsidies.
Well, there have been some terrific questions tonight. I want to thank our panelists very much, Representative Jim Dunnigan, Jason Stevenson with UHPP, Nate Checkets, Utah Department of Health, and Celia Nash Underwood with Team Nash. Please join me with a round of applause for them. Thank you. Thanks also to KCPW Public Radio for broadcasting this forum. Thanks to you for your terrific questions. Again, we were flooded with them, and we will absolutely use these as we continue our coverage of the Affordable Care Act. For much more information and full coverage of health reform, you can visit our website, sltrib.com. For the Salt Lake Tribune, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Thank you, and good night.